Hello, I'm Rochelle Jackson, and welcome to the Crime Couch. I'm an investigative journalist and true crime author, and I know who's who in the zoo on both sides of the fence, the crooks and the cops. So get comfy and join me each week on the Crime Couch for a rollicking, intriguing tale. It'll be one heck of a journey. Bill Jackson is a former top cop with Victoria Police, registered number 12372. He was a chief superintendent, awarded an APM, and when Bill retired at 60, he was the longest serving member in the state. He's also my dad. We're sitting in Bill's lounge room on a very grey and misty, rainy day. Hi, Bill. Thanks very much for sitting with me on the Crime Couch today.
Good. It's my pleasure to talk to you, Rochelle.
You joined the job, Bill, as a 19-year-old in 1956. Now, what attracted you to Victoria Police?
I wanted to join the police force in Victoria from when I was about 14 or 15 years of age, but I couldn't apply until I was 19, which I did.
And did it live up to what you expected?
Yes, I joined as a constable in 1956, and I went through the ranks and eventually retired at 60 years of age, which was the compulsory retirement age. And at that time, when I was 60, I was the chief superintendent of E District, located at Dandenong.
You had a tough upbringing, Bill, pretty much abandoned by your mum. You left school at 14 and you worked on the construction of the Eildon Weir. What did the police force offer you?
Well, I wanted some sort of security, some job that appealed to me, and the job that I did at Eildon, working for the Utah Construction Company, that only lasted for about 4 years, and I knew then I would be unemployed.
So Victoria Police really then was like another family for you?
Yes, it was, and I've always enjoyed my time with VicPol, and I took promotion and, was at various stations and various places in my 40 years in the job.
What are your recollections, Bill, of joining at the old police depot in St Kilda Road? I remember you talking to me about who interviewed you at that stage. Who was on the board?
When I applied down at the police depot, as we called it in those days, every applicant, after they'd passed their educational test and physical test, every applicant was interviewed by the chief commissioner, and I was one of the applicants that was interviewed by the chief superintendent, Selwyn Havelock Porter, who used to be the chief executive for the Myer Emporium.
How did he strike you?
He was a very pleasant man. He was on the board together with the superintendent of training at the police depot and a member of the police association. And I remember him saying to me, "Why do you want to join the Victoria Police?" And I don't know what I said in reply, but I remember him saying, "Well, that was a very good answer."
But you can't remember what you said.
Can't remember what it was, no. Long time ago, of course.
Of course, it must have been impressive. What squad were you in, Bill, and where did you finish?
I was in squad 5 of 1956, and there were 31 of us in that squad, and I finished at number 11, which wasn't in the top group, but I sort of finished one of the third in the top third.
Explain to me and describe for me, give me a word picture of what life was like for a young single policeman in the late 1950s in Melbourne at Russell Street headquarters.
Well, once we passed out from the depot, they graduate today from the academy, but in those days we passed out from the police depot and the squad marched through the city up Russell Street to police headquarters, and you were then stationed at Russell Street for the first 12 months. And Russell Street was quite a little city of its own. Being a single man, I had to reside in barracks in the upper part of the tower, and everything was provided there. I luckily had a single room, and there was a kitchen there with a couple of chefs, and they cooked your meals, there was a gymnasium there, there was a pool room there where you could play pool, and there was a library. So it was quite a little city within itself.
What about socially? Were you allowed to go out? Did people sneak out? How tough was the discipline?
There was discipline. You had to be in by 12 midnight each night, and there was only one of the entrances open, and quite often there'd be an inspector standing there when you came in, and if you were 5 or 10 minutes late, he'd give you a bit of a blast, but usually that was about all there was to it. But it was quite an interesting place, and one of the things that I remember, there was an auditorium there in Latrobe Street, and every Thursday night they used to have a dance with a live 3 or 4 piece band. It was a very popular place for the young coppers, and also very popular with the young nurses who lived in nursing homes at the main public hospital. So it was a good place to meet up.
Explain to me your first duty. You're a young constable. You had a couple of very significant sorts of events that you went to, including, a specific Melbourne event, as well as court duty and night shift at Parliament House.
Yes, that was one of the worst duties. Night shift at Parliament House, or the night shift used to be 11 p.m. until 7 in the morning, and if you're lucky enough, one of the good jobs on that shift was the bicycle patrol, which would be with another member about your same stage, and you'd ride around the city, but you had hourly points. You had to be at different places on the hour, and you'd get visited by the inspector, and sometimes they even came back again. They might have visited you at 2 o'clock or 3 a.m. and they might come back at 5 a.m. and visit you. So you had to keep these different points, because that was also partly for your own welfare, because you were just working by yourself with just two of you, and you were very inexperienced, and there were a lot of strange people about that could have caused you some harm or even something more serious.
Were you involved in the Melbourne's first Olympic Games?
Yeah, in 1956. I can remember being at the MCG, and that was, a very good duty to be at, and, it was a big time for Melbourne.
You were very particular with your police uniform, weren't you?
Yes, I always liked to be properly dressed and shined shoes, and I never ever... You were always inspected before you went on duty by an inspector. So that section, whichever one it was, whether it was the 7 a.m., the 3 p.m. or the 11 p.m. section, and sometimes, you know, there might have been a dozen members in that. Sometimes there might have only been four or five. But you're always inspected by the inspector before you went on duty. So you had to be in the right gear and looking smart and have your uniform correctly attired.
But you went one step further than that, didn't you, Bill? Because you actually got yours custom made. Explain why you did that.
The uniform that you were provided with was made at the Commonwealth Uniform Factory, which was somewhere on the northern side of town. But that was provided, but I used to get mine tailored by a tailor called Louis Epstein, and you would be measured and he would tailor a uniform for you, and you'd go in and have a fitting when it was halfway made, and then you'd finally go back and get the finished uniform. So I was always very keen to be properly dressed.
Why was that?
Oh, just personal thing, I guess.
You worked initially at the watch house. What did you have to do there? Explain your duties there.
Well, when I've thought about it lately, I've thought it was a very dangerous type of job because, although I didn't realise that at the time, but I was stationed at Russell Street, and you'd just go across the road and you'd be working at the City Watch House, and of an afternoon shift or a night shift, there would only be a sergeant and yourself on duty. And you had to, the sergeant wouldn't do it, but he would give you the keys, and you had to go and check on the prisoners every hour to make sure that they were alive and they weren't ill, or, you know, and some of them would be drunk and they'd be quite raucous. So I'd take the keys on a big ring and I'd go down and open the big door going down to the common area where the cells were, and you would open the door and look in, and if they were all right or if they were asleep, sometimes you'd kick their feet to make sure they were still alive. And it never struck me as a very dangerous job, but now I realise it was a very dangerous job. They were all sorts of people locked up there, some pretty hardened criminals, and they would have been very, it would have been very easy to take the keys from you and set all the others free and then get out through the watch house. But that never happened, but it could have.
Your first stint, Bill, was at Victoria Dock. Now, what was that like? Because the Docklands were a real melting pot to a certain extent. How were cops perceived down there?
Well, because you were very junior in the police force, you weren't able to apply for different vacancies. But one of the places that they used to send young guys like me to was down to Victoria Dock, where there was a station there. There was quite a modern station. It was manned by an inspector, a senior sergeant, and probably about four sergeants and about 50 men. And you patrolled the docks. And again, it was quite a dangerous job because there are all sorts of people working there. You'd patrol the docks on foot, and you were sort of having to enforce the Victoria Dockland regulations, which meant that the people working there, the wharfies, weren't to lounge about, that was the term, lounge about on cargo or smoke within 25 feet of the holds or, you know, whatever. So these were Melbourne Harbour Trust regulations, which when you charged the wharfies with it, you weren't a very popular sort of person.
What was the relationship like in those days, Bill, between crims and cops?
Well, there were a lot of crims worked on the waterfront and they didn't particularly like the police. And every time they finished their shift, they had to go out one of two gates. And if they were in their private cars, you would make them open up the boot and have a look in the boot and just check, make sure, look in the back of the car and make sure they weren't taking anything out that they shouldn't have.
Was there a difference, and did it strike you that there was a difference between the training in the depot and the real world?
Oh, I think there was. I think it was quite different in the real world and very theoretically correct in the depot. But, you know, when you actually got out onto the street, it was quite a different thing.
How do you view today's police? They're dealing with things such as counter-terrorism, drugs, in particular ICE, homelessness and family violence. Were these some of the similar sorts of things that you had to deal with as a police member?
Yeah, they were. Those things all happened then, but perhaps because of the increase in population today, there are many more of those offences. But yeah, they occurred quite regularly.
Why did you become a detective?
Well, I wanted to join the CIB, and I could see that that was one of my ambitions, to join the CIB and make progress in the job.
And do you feel that you became a chief superintendent? Did you fulfil everything that you wanted to do when you were in the job?
Oh, yes. I think, you know, to join as a constable and end up as chief superintendent, a district commander in charge of a number of 24-hour police stations and smaller police stations. And when I was the chief super at Dandenong, I had, about 500 or 600 men under my control.
Men and women?
Men and women, but mainly men in those days.
What did it mean to you, Bill, being awarded an APM?
It was a great honour. I had to go to State Parliament House and get the medal down there, and my wife and family, kids came along, and it was quite an occasion.
How do you now reflect on the job? You've been out of the job now for a couple of decades. How would you sum up your life in the job?
I enjoyed most of it. Most of the places I was at, I enjoyed being there, and I can't remember any particular station where I didn't like being there. I moved to a number of different stations. After Russell Street, when I became a sergeant, I went to Collingwood and always was a Collingwood supporter and still am. And Saturday afternoons, Collingwood used to play at Victoria Park, and I'd go up there, it was always on a Saturday afternoon, I'd go up there with eight constables and we'd police the game, and that was just the normal complement in those days. And sometimes you'd have a bit of strife. If Collingwood won that game at Victoria Park, the locals were very happy, but if they got beaten, all hell used to break loose.
How do you view policing now, Bill?
Well, it's changed a great deal from when I was there, and some things are probably for the better. And it's, you know, it's quite a modern police force these days.
What advice would you give to any young members that had just joined the job or people that were interested in joining? What advice would you give them about being a police member?
Well, I'd want to make sure they knew what they were going to be doing, and the best way to do that is to call into your local police station and ask some questions about what the role was, so that when you go for an interview, you know what it is, you know, so you've got to be realistic about that.
And how do you think, you're now 84 years of age, how do you think you'll be remembered in the job? 40 years, four decades, how do you think you'll be remembered?
I don't really know. I don't know. I've been out of the job for a long time, and whether I'm what they call a police veteran now, and whether there'll be any official recognition at my funeral when I go, I've got no idea.
How would you like to be remembered?
Well, I've always kept my cap that I wore, which has a Chief Superintendent's braid around the peak, and that will go on my coffin. But whether there'll be anyone from headquarters there, who knows?
Well, thank you very much for sitting with me today, Bill and Dad, on the Crime Couch.
It was a pleasure. I hope I explained things satisfactorily.
Beautiful job. Thanks for joining me. I'm Rochelle Jackson, and I look forward to your company next time on The Crime Couch.